If your restaurant wants to put the best on the table, look for food with the New York State Certified Seal. It's food that is grown right, right here. Learn more at certified.ny.gov.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Welcome to Feast Your Ears. I'm Harry Rosenblum from the Brooklyn Kitchen, a cooking store located at 100 Frost Street in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Join me every Wednesday as I talk with people about what they do and how it influences their personal food stories. This is a show about people, life, and food. Today's essay is called On Being Late. It feels like everyone is late all the time. I know it's not actually true, and that you don't notice when someone's on time because, well, that's normal. But it does seem to me that the world we live in makes it okay, or at least not a big deal, to be late all the time. We're all trying to fit in more and more, at least I am. And as such, we put things way too close together on our calendars without leaving any room for the vagaries of life. Running into somebody, chatting an extra 10 minutes, the train being late, or whatever. Cell phones. I was once told by an octogenarian friend have allowed people to be late all the time because you can just text someone and tell them you're running behind. Somehow this ability to communicate all the time excuses the fact that you've now broken an agreement, albeit a small one. We have almost everything on demand. Cars, food, TV, movies we can start and stop whenever you want them to. I'm not lamenting that. I do love the fact that I don't ever have to watch commercials anymore, and that I can get a car to pick me up wherever, whenever. But the ingrained sense that we can control everything is something I'm watching my kids grow up with. They want whatever it is, and they want it whenever, wherever. I, for one, am trying to be a little less crazed by this. Leave a little more time to get somewhere. You might find something cool along the way. Or sit on a bench with your coffee for 10 minutes, or even have time to look at Facebook if that's your thing. The point is, don't be late. Be early, and you'll be happier. Today's episode 59 of Feast Your Ears. We're pre-recording it here in the studio behind Roberta's at Heritage Radio. It is Monday, January 16th, Martin Luther King Jr. Day. But this is, you are hearing this if you're listening live on Wednesday, January 18th, my mother's birthday. She passed away a few years ago, but perhaps those of you that know her will think of her when you hear this show. Joining me today in the studio, I'm very pleased to have Matt Marchese. Matt is a personal chef now, but used to work in a lot of great restaurants. He's the owner of a three-legged cat, which we'll hear a little bit about. And he is sort of behind some of your favorite places in Bushwick. Thanks for joining me, Matt.
Thank you. Morning.
Also in the studio, I have a special guest associate host, Moxie. Will you please introduce yourself?
Hello, my name is Moxie, and I'm very happy to be here. This is my fourth time being on the radio.
Thank you, Moxie.
That's awesome.
So, Matt, can you tell me a little bit about yourself? Invariably, we live in a world where if you find out someone's name, you can, like, do a quick Google search,
right,
or, like, check on LinkedIn or whatever. But when you meet somebody and they're like, oh, man, you know, you're telling a story, like, that sounds cool, and talk about what you do. What do you say? What do you do?
I usually say, yeah, I'm a personal chef and work for a great family, partner in a few businesses. And yeah, I guess the three-legged cat thing comes up.
So tell me about, I mean, your life as a chef. You worked in restaurants before becoming a personal
chef,
right? Yeah.
So I would say, you know, I did some high school classes, like almost like vocational classes, and it really kind of catapulted me into like, okay, I want to be a chef. I didn't really know what that entailed.
Wow, so as a teenager, you were already like,
yeah,
on like, the path of wanting to handle food and cook.
Yeah,
and
I didn't know what it entailed or like what really being a chef was all about. I just knew I wanted to be one.
Can you track that to like a specific moment? Do you remember a teacher or a class or an ingredient?
You know, not really. I just knew freshman year in high school, I was more excited about foods. I think it was foods 101. And then advanced foods, I excelled in those classes because I cared about it, and yeah, all the other subjects. I was a terrible student. So,
well, but in those classes, though, you get some of the other stuff, right? You get math.
Yeah.
You get it, you know, and then as you learn more, you get an understanding of, you know, social studies. You get an understanding of, like, cuisines to a certain extent.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, I guess that's kind of the underlying stuff that I didn't really notice at the time, but I guess that's kind of true. And, I'd say from there, and then I kind of really did the whole wash dishes at this place for 6 months because they didn't need anybody in the kitchen. And then I started prepping, and then...
And that was in New Hampshire?
That was all in New Hampshire, yeah. And then I start, you know, on the line, or I started prepping, and then I got to be a line cook, and it just moved my way up from there.
At my school, I learn a lot of math.
At your school, you learn a lot of math? Thank you, Moxie, for interjecting that. Well, if you decide to get into cooking, you know, maybe as a teenager, Moxie, you can do more of that stuff. So you came up in the restaurant world the way lots of people do, right?
Yeah.
You started washing dishes, you started at the bottom, and then you continued up through the ranks in kind of like a traditional kitchen.
Right. Yeah. You know, I went from, it was actually it was called Crescent City Bistro in New Hampshire, and it was like Cajun Creole, but I'd learned a lot there. I learned just more like how a kitchen works, you know, from the dishwasher to the scheduling and, you know, just kind of the rigmarole, camaraderie, you know, flipping pans.
Right.
You know.
Right. And then where did your career take you?
Then I knew I wanted to do nicer food, so I worked a couple places in Maine, and then I knew I wanted to work even nicer places, so I went to Boston, which was kind of like the obligatory next step for fine dining. I worked at Radius, Number 9 Park. And then it kind of was like, all right, well, next stop is New York City.
Right. You know?
And I got here in 2005. And I wanted to work for Alain Ducasse at the Essex House. Like, that was my ultimate goal. But there was like a 2-month waiting list just to stodge, like
right.
just to get in there. So I checked coats at Casa Mono. Off of Union Square.
So you were back to like wanting to be in the building, but not in the kitchen.
It was extremely humbling because, you know, I came to New York. I thought I had my chops. I'm like, you know, I'm good. I'm going to get a job wherever. And they're like, you're going to wait. And I also didn't want to commit to another restaurant.
Because you had your sights set on
that
level.
I didn't want to go in and say, you know, oh, I'll take the job. And then 2 months later, peace, you know?
Yeah.
So I checked coats and I made like $60 a night, and it was enough for beer money. And
right.
Yeah, that was about it.
and then did you end up at the Essex House?
So I did end up at the Essex House, with 3 other guys staging, and all we did for a week, like no joke, it was in the spring. Spring is pea season. All I did was shuck peas, blanch peas, and then pick the skin off of peas and then split the peas. That's all I did for a week.
Wow.
But then I got the job.
Yeah. It's sort of like being in the mine. You were like in the pea mine.
Yeah. 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 We were pea miners. Yeah.
And then how long did you work there?
I think I did about a year, a little over a year. And then it closed. So that was that. And then I went to 11 Madison Park to interview for a sous chef position.
Hmm.
And I was the first like East Coast, like he basically brought his team from the West Coast.
Right.
And I was the first hired sous chef, whatever. I had to do a tasting. That was intense. But it was almost as soon as I got the job and started working, I kind of got this itch. Like I had not reached the top, but I was like, you know what? The next step is either going to be a chef at a restaurant.
Right, you then need to be the head and you have to be the face and be the guy.
Yeah, and I was like, you know, I'm good at cooking. I don't think I'm going to be very good at running a kitchen.
Right.
I just kind of knew I didn't have those certain personality traits.
Right.
And the personal chef thing, I had always, you know, heard about. It's, but again, like, just like when I was younger, I didn't really know what becoming a chef entailed.
Right.
I didn't know what becoming a personal chef entailed.
Right.
But I knew the money was better. The hours are better.
Right. I mean, it's interesting. I mean, I feel like I hear a lot of chefs sort of, you know, obviously like the schedule is like the thing they lament almost the most. Right?
I mean
it's just brutal.
Immediately. It's just I'm like, what? I can come in at noon right. and I get out at 8? Wait, I can have a morning.
It's only 8 hours and, like, yeah.
Yeah, 8 hours. It's, you know, I would say a 50-hour work week is a busy week for me now.
Right.
Whereas, you know, 70 was the norm.
Right, sure.
And I get paid for all those hours, which is really strange.
Yeah, well, that's a, yeah, it's a whole separate thing.
Yeah.
So when did you make the jump into being a personal chef?
I would say 6 months after being at 11 Madison.
Got it.
And I left and I put my resume out there to basically, like, most personal chefs, nannies, housekeepers, you go through domestic placement agencies.
Got it.
So I dropped my resume off. Or emailed her or whatever. I got a call that afternoon. And they're like, hey, you know, Blama, can you come in for an interview? Did that. And then I had an interview the very next day. And it was with Tori Burch, the shoe designer.
Yeah.
So I worked for her for a year and a half. But that really kind of catapulted me into, like, once I had that on my resume.
Yep.
I was golden.
Right.
I was very lucky. Right. She was dating Lance Armstrong at the time, and it was just a good, right place, right time.
Cool.
Yeah.
And then how long have you been with the family that you work for now?
The family I'm with now, in June, it'll be 6 years.
Oh, wow.
Which is, it's seriously strange for me to say that, because prior to this job, I think the longest I ever stayed at any job was 2 years.
Right. Sure. I mean, that's a long, like... It's a long time.
Yeah.
And to see a lot of changes, it's not the same as I assume it was with Tori Burch and Lance Armstrong or whatever.
No, like, absolutely.
You know,
not.
That's someone who's, you know, I mean, obviously, I know, I'm sure the family travels a lot, but, like, there's three kids, right?
Yeah, three kids.
So two parents, three children, and you are responsible for, like, what is your responsibility end up being? Like, are you responsible for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, just dinners?
So I'm off today because of the holiday,
yep.
But tomorrow, basically, Monday through Friday, I do appetizer, entree, dessert, just dinner. And, but I'll bring, you know, breakfast items. I'll bring sausage and chia seed pudding, just maybe like 5 or 6 things that just, those are there for the week.
And they just go in the fridge and they eat them themselves whenever they want.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But I would say 85% of the time, it's just Monday through Friday, appetizer, entree, dessert, but then... they're Jewish, so every Friday they have a Shabbat dinner, challah and everything. And then in the summer, it mixes up a little bit. It's a schedule gets kind of rearranged.
Right, kids go to camp.
Kids go to camp, and now actually all the kids are at camp. So, you know, it's just the parents. They do, a good amount of entertaining, but it's mellow in the summer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's your, you know, all the time job. And then you do at least one dinner a year at Montana's? More than that?
I do one annual. We just did our third one, winter dinner. Just do like a pre-fee, one seating. And then as soon as that's done, we move all the tables out and have a debaucherous holiday party.
Do you ever, when you're doing that, feel like you want to get back into the kitchen?
Honestly, it's so fun. I have so much fun doing it.
Yeah.
Like the prep and just like really kind of being in a service and having that camaraderie, which I actually do kind of miss sometimes. But as soon as we're done and clean up, I'm like, I'm so glad I don't have to do any ordering or, you know.
I eat chia seed pudding because my mommy makes it.
Very nice.
That's
what
great.
Kind of? What kind or what flavor?
My mommy last night. I helped her make a mango.
Nice. I'll have to try that.
And what did you put in it this morning, Moxie? What did you flavor it with?
We flavored it with vanilla.
Ooh, nice.
And we had some for breakfast.
Yum.
But I'm the only one who had it because my mommy, my daddy, or my brother didn't want it.
Nice.
Well, we're going to take a short break and hear from one of our sponsors here. And when we come back, Moxie, will you get ready? I think you have a question for Matt about his cat.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
We'll be right back.
York chefs and restaurants are proud of the food they put on the table. And serving produce that comes from local, environmentally responsible farms is a way to leave an even better taste in everyone's mouth. So when shopping for your ingredients, look for the New York State Grown and Certified seal. It lets you know which food is grown right here in New York State, certifying the food that comes from local farms that meet a higher standard. You'll not only be serving local food, you'll be supporting local farmers. Learn more about the New York State Grown and Certified program at certified.ny.gov.
Welcome back to Feast Your Ears. I'm Harry Rosenblum from the Brooklyn Kitchen, and in the studio today I have my co-host and assistant, Moxie, and I also have Matt Marchese, who has joined us to talk about his life cooking, and now I think Moxie had some questions for Matt about his cat. So Matt, I'll let you sort of introduce. So Matt has a cat named Pam, who is missing a leg. And perhaps we can hear that story. But Pam and Matt have also are like, you know, are you fully internet famous? I don't know how to describe it. I know there are some pictures of you that have appeared of you with your cat.
There are. So this photographer, David Williams, super nice guy, great photographer. I want to say it's like 3 or 4 years ago. He did a project called Men with Cats. And he knew I'm a cat nerd, so he got my contact, he came over to the apartment, took 2-3 pictures, and he's like, you know, maybe someone will do something with it. I didn't think anything of it. And then he was going to do a book.
Right.
But, you know, it was like a year and a half later, he's like, it's out on Amazon. And then all these people picked it up, like ABC, Juxtapose, Bored Panda. And the best was, I host on Airbnb. I had guests coming from the Netherlands, and maybe 2 days before they came, they're like, hey, we're excited for our stay. You know, where can we get the keys? And were you and Pam on the internet? I'm like, yep, that's us. That's us.
So, I expect sort of like the logical next step of that is for you're going to get an Airbnb request if someone can just come over and meet Pam.
Hang out with the cat. Yeah. She's, all the reviews, they always mention her. So. Yeah. She's a charmer.
Moxie, did you have a question about Pam?
Why does he have a leg missing?
I got really hungry one day. No, that's not true. yeah. Not very good. I got her when she was 2 months old, and right before her first birthday, she was hanging out on the window. And then she could walk out. I used to leave the window open. She'd walk out into the fire escape, come back in. But one-year-old kittens are still kind of dumb. Yeah. And I live on the third floor. So she mistook her step and she fell.
Whoa. Did she land on her feet?
She landed. They said the way she landed, I guess three stories is bad for cats. Like one is okay, two is okay, three is bad. And then, you know. It goes up from there.
Right.
So she fell, but she took the brunt of it all on the one leg, and she broke it in 9 spots.
Wow.
So I brought her to the emergency vet, and as soon as I walked in over the intercom, it's like, oh, we have a level 3 high rise, which means she fell from
third floor.
3 floors. They see it a lot, and they had to amputate. So now she has 3 legs.
Doesn't seem to bother her much.
She's very handy capable. She can jump up on everything, run. Like, most people don't even notice that she has 3 legs. But she's a trooper.
And is she, like, your recipe tester? Like, does she taste the food that you
She doesn't, but she really likes olives.
Huh.
Which is strange.
That is kind of strange.
She really likes olives, and she watches me cook all day. I have a quarter hotel pan that I put a piece of parchment in, and she'll sleep in there for 4 hours a day. It's really strange.
Yeah. That's awesome. That's great. So I mentioned at the opening of the show that you're also involved in a lot of great, great businesses around here.
Yes.
So tell me about the businesses that you have a hand in.
So I'm partner and it's kind of becoming like a family of businesses. Yeah. The first was Montana's Trail House, which opened up almost 3 years ago. Mm. And that's pretty close to here. With a bunch of fellas. And then last year opened up Twin Sons Deli, which is on Himrod. And then most recently, just a couple months ago, we opened up a bar called Darlings.
And that's right next door to Twin Sons, right?
Literally, yeah, we share a wall. Yeah, kind of cozy New England-y bar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. And for you, what is your involvement in it?
Pretty Montana's. I'm pretty silent. I mean, try to, go to the meetings and hear what's up and, give input when needed. But, I don't force it. Same with the deli. And then the bar, I'm a little bit more, I'd say, vocal with
with your New England background.
Yeah. And Fence, our operator, or Daniel, he's, hands on all the time. But we all kind of, him, Montana, and I, kind of, we have meetings and we talk about what we should do, what we shouldn't do, what's working, but it's a good relationship.
Cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, it sounds, it sounds like it's a good family. Is it growing?
Are there more things
on the horizon?
Yeah. We have a couple new things. One that's going to start pretty soon, but cool. We'll keep that under wraps for a bit.
Awesome. Let's talk a little about mushrooms. One of the things that Matt and I have spent a lot of time, in our years knowing each other talking about is mushrooms. Mm-hmm. You've done a lot of mushroom foraging, a lot of cooking with mushrooms. Where did you learn to do that?
one restaurant, I worked for the chef, Mark Allen, at a restaurant called Le Soir in Newton Highlands. It's a neighborhood right out of Boston. We had this guy, Benjamin, and I can't remember his last name. We're friends on Facebook, but Benjamin, who is one of the strangest people I'll ever meet. Or have ever met. He's a mushroom forager through and through, like a total, what do they call it? Mycophiliac?
Mycophiliac.
Yeah, mycophiliac, just mushroom man, like just crazy. So anyways, he came in one day. We used his service. He would forage, and we'd buy mushrooms from him. I did not like mushrooms. I did not like mushrooms. I was 21, and I was working at this restaurant. He came in, and he would give us beautiful maitake, like amazing chanterelle. And I started tasting these mushrooms. I'm like, these are amazing. Just fried in butter, like just properly seasoned, roasted garlic. And now I'm hooked on mushrooms. But from then, I'm like, no joke, would have dreams about finding mushrooms. Like, I still do.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
I remember a couple of years ago, you had a secret spot in Queens.
Yes.
With some chicken of the woods.
Chicken of the woods and hen of the woods. I think that year was such a good year. I think I hauled out close to 90 pounds.
Wow. That's amazing. But isn't that, and it was the next year that the New York Times totally blew up your spot?
Ruined it.
Yeah.
Completely ruined it. Yeah.
So talk a little bit about that. Like, how did it get ruined? I mean, you pulled 90 pounds out of there. So what happened? I mean, I know they wrote about it, but.
Yeah, they did an article on like urban foraging and Prospect Park and Forest Park and Queens, and it just seriously all the spots that I had, I would go and they'd be decimated. Like, and it's kind of like forager's etiquette to if you see a nice big oak tree and there's six maitake clusters growing, you take two,
right,
and you leave some for the next person. These people were just like stripping it, and they're pulling the root out instead of, cutting it and leaving it. So they don't know what they're doing. It just kind of, it was a bad article for the foraging community.
What's your favorite mushroom?
I kind of always go back and forth. Honestly, I think bang for your buck, maitake. I just think the flavor is like, it's just so earthy and so nutty, umami.
Yep.
I used to say matsutake because like they're so expensive and they're such a cool Japanese delicacy.
Yep.
But to be honest, that's almost they're just too strong.
Yeah, they do. I mean, yeah, there's a really strong flavor. You know? Yeah,
maitake, I could eat a whole bowl.
Yeah, like just... absolutely. Yeah, I mean, there's big maitakes that grow under the oak trees at my dad's house.
Right.
But they didn't fruit this past year. And so I'm sort of waiting to see if they're going to fruit this year.
Right.
And I have, you know, there is some indication that really, really old, really large, you know, large mushrooms. I mean, the mycelium is huge under the ground, right? Sometimes only fruit every other year. So I'm curious to see if these are on like an every other year cycle, or if something happened to them.
Right.
I mean, who knows? Maybe they fruited really early and I just didn't notice. I mean, I didn't look until October. Right. Maybe the weather was such they fruited early.
It was also a super dry summer.
Yes, it was. Yeah. So that may have definitely affected it. But, you know, I think in part thanks to you, I've become really interested in mushrooms. And so now I see them everywhere.
I mean,
you just notice them all over the place. Yeah. I was in Pittsburgh and I saw, you know, I saw an artist conch on a tree in a park. And I was, you know, I was in Providence over the holidays and my father-in-law has these giant stumps that he uses as like tables in the backyard.
Mm-hmm.
And they had little oyster mushrooms growing out of them. I was just like, oh my God, look at all this.
They
crazy.
They are everywhere. Yeah, there's a spot on Hope Street next to the Zipcar garage. And every year, like right after the rain, there's this just, you know, city tree planter that has like this crappy, like dyed red mulch. Stinkhorns every year.
Yep. Stinkhorns used to come up a lot I used to see them in the dog run. When I took the dog to the dog run, stinkhorns used to come up in the dog run.
I think it's the chips.
Yeah, like, I think it is. I think it's, chips. Yeah, it's gotta be. Yeah. It's gotta be in the chips. It makes a lot of sense. So, you know, you fell in love with mushrooms.
Mm-hmm.
Other foods that you hated as a kid that then suddenly became like something you love?
Olives. Yeah. I, did not like olives at all. And then when I was working at that place in Maine, I was making, you know, nothing and just trying to get by. And, you know, we were cleaning out the basement and the chef's like, yeah, just take all this stuff. So there was like a case of Castle Vetrano's.
Yeah.
And I was just like kind of starving. Like I was like really a poor cook and I'm like, I'll eat whatever.
Right. Even though I don't like it, I know it's food.
Exactly. Yeah. And I'm eating them. And I'm like, these are the best things ever. I love Castle Vetrano's, like nutty and briny.
So before the show started, we were chatting here in the studio. Moxie, it looks like she has something she wants to ask you about.
About the mushrooms. I mean, were the New York Times people following you when you went there?
Oh, good question.
That is a good question. No,
I wonder how they found out about it.
I honestly don't know how they found out about it.
I mean, we are talking about an urban park where, I mean, even though it was a hidden spot, you weren't the only person who passed through there, right? And so someone had to have noticed.
Right, and it's New York City, so.
Yeah.
And maybe even that, what's his name? Wild man.
Oh, Steve Brill.
Steve Brill, yeah. So maybe that kind of had something to do with it.
That's a good question, Moxie. But I mean, it'd be weird, right, if the New York Times was following Matt around.
Yeah.
In the woods, that'd be really
weird.
Maybe they had, like gecko. Maybe they had a camouflage.
Oh, maybe they were camouflaged, yeah.
That'd be extra creepy.
Yeah, that'd be crazy. We were talking about something that, you know, for most people, I think is probably the weirdest thing they've ever eaten. I don't know if it is for you.
Mm-hmm.
But the other night, I hear that you tried balut.
Oh, yeah. That is not good stuff.
Moxie, do you know what balut is?
No.
Do you want to take a guess?
Think
of something someone might eat, but that might be kind of gross. Some people might think it's gross. Some people love it. I mean, it's not, you know, people eat it, so it can't, you know.
I get it. I get it, but it's...
I don't know what
you don't know?
It is.
All right, Matt, will you tell us and the listeners what balut is?
It is a Filipino, I wouldn't say dish. It's basically a duck egg that's fertilized. So that means the chicken is growing in the egg.
So it's like an embryo.
It's an embryo.
Right? It's so like partial. It's not fully.
So you're eating the chicken and the egg?
Yes,
at the same time.
Eating the chicken and the egg.
So you basically...
Ew.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I said. The smell, too, is indescribable.
Is it fermented? I don't know that much about how it's prepared. I mean, I know what it
is. But, it's cooked. Yeah. So, you know, they basically, the thing is growing, and then they pop it in water or steam it or however they do it. That obviously kills the little bird. And then you crack it open, you drink the juice, which I did not. I tasted the juice, but I wouldn't say I drank it. And then you peel it away, and there's a little baby duck. Like head, beak, feathers, wings, the whole nine. And it was about, I'd say, what's that, 3 inches, 4 inches? And then there's egg, but it's fertilized, so there's all these veins running through the egg.
Yeah.
It's not a pretty thing. It's not a good-looking thing.
So it's not cute?
The little duck is kind of cute. The little duck is kind of cute, but it's also kind of sad.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, man.
You used to be able to get fertilized chicken eggs, not with, like, not embryo in them,
right,
but, like, fertilized. So you just starting, like, the yolk would almost be, like, the shape, but it didn't have bones and feathers and stuff.
Okay.
At Sammy's Romanian. And that would, like, that's an old Eastern European thing where, and I think it was something where when they would, when there was an old laying hen, and they would slaughter it, or if, like, a fox would kill it or whatever, mm-hmm, they'd still eat it. So there were eggs that were, like, I guess...
on their way.
I mean, they called them unborn eggs was the way that it was described. But I don't know what... I don't know if they were eggs that hadn't been laid yet, or if they were eggs that had been fertilized.
Right, or the timing on that.
Yeah, I'm not sure the timing on that. But anyway, you used to be able to get it. I haven't seen it on the Sammy's menu in a long time. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's something you can even get in this country anymore.
Right.
I guess Ariane Dagoin from D'Artagnan would be the person to ask, being that she's, you know, poultry is her real thing.
Right, that makes sense.
I did learn a fun fact about food in America. When she started D'Artagnan, coxcombs weren't available as food. They were all condemned at the slaughterhouse. And so she actually had a French chef who asked her for coxcombs from roosters and chickens.
No way.
And so she actually had to, like, lobby to get those to be, like, actually saved at the slaughterhouse to be allowed.
I had no idea. That's awesome. That's really cool.
So, have you ever cooked with coxcombs?
I have.
I never have.
Yeah. They're...
I know what those are.
Yeah?
They're the top of the chicken's head.
Yep. And they're... Honestly, I like them. I think they're... They're aggressive tasting, but if, you know, braise them or confit them, they're nice.
I know what they are because I was looking at a picture on I think, my mom or my daddy's phone, and there were... was them, and I didn't know what they were, and that my mommy told them.
It was in fact a picture on Paul Wetzel's Instagram, who is the sous chef at Gramercy Tavern.
Yeah.
He was cooking with them.
Have you had them, Moxie?
No.
Someday maybe.
Yeah.
So balut, thumbs down.
So we cracked one open.
Yeah.
There's a few of us at the bar, and honestly, the egg yolk, it tastes like chicken soup, like really.
Huh.
Intense chicken soup. The white is, it churns unbelievably hard.
Hmm.
Like
almost stringy,
like rubber.
Oh wow.
Yeah. And then we had a few more drinks, and then we ended up putting the head in a shot of tequila, and I did that, and then my friend put the body in his and ate that.
All right.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess similar kind of to ortolan, right? Which apparently, like, nobody... I mean, ortolan is not something that you, like, see on menus anymore. Those are the tiny little French birds that, like, you eat them by, if I remember correctly... I forget how they're... I think they're cooked in brandy. And then you hold the beak. They have, like, a long beak. And you hold the beak, and you're supposed to put the... you're supposed to put the napkin over your head so you don't see each other eating. It's like this old French thing.
Whoa.
Brillat Savarin writes about it, and, like... And you basically, I believe, you hold the beak, and so you eat the whole thing, including the head except the beak.
Oh, boy. That's something I would try.
Yeah. I mean,
the brandy,
I feel like you try anything once, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
You tried balut once.
I tried the balut. Yeah.
I would try it once,
yeah,
for sure. And, you know, who knows? I mean, you know, I've heard that there are some foods, right, like super fermented, stinky Taiwanese tofu is supposed to be one of those things that, like, you can either, like, eat it or you just, like, smell it and you cannot.
You know, I actually think the yolk, like, if you made it into kind of like a deviled egg filling, like, would be an awesome spread on a toast.
Yeah.
That I could do, put some shallots and maybe some brandy, but yeah.
But Daddy, what you were talking about, would you keep the beak?
Would I keep it? Like wear it? Like wear it on, as a necklace?
Make a necklace out of them?
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, I kept my wisdom teeth in a box. I wanted to keep my tonsils. The doctor wouldn't let me.
Whoa.
I was like, they're mine. Can I have them? And they were like, no, they're medical waste. And I was like, but they're mine.
But they're my medical waste.
They're my medical waste. Give them back. So, you know, I mean, I, you know, that's sort of how it goes. I mean, you know, if you go back, I don't have it in front of me which episode it was, but I have done an interview on here about eating placenta after birth.
Right.
So, I mean, like, there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of stuff that people eat. And, you know, I mean, people drink Soylent. I mean, you know, right. It's all kinds of weird stuff out there.
Their own. Yeah. I mean, we eat blue cheese, and it's a weird thing.
Totally. So one other sort of food thing. I know at your birthday party a few years ago, you had live eels in your bobbing for apple tank.
Yeah.
Did anybody, I mean, was there like a prize if you bobbed for an eel and got one?
Here's the thing. We actually had a waiver that you had to sign because eels bite, and
oh wow, yeah,
if they're you know, if they feel like they're
sure
in danger,
bite you
which
on the nose,
they
while you're...
are, yeah, if, you know, and we had goggles, and
did anybody get bit?
Nobody got bit, right. But they were moving around.
And then what'd you do with the eels afterwards?
I mean, we couldn't just throw them away,
of
so
course.
We, you know, cornstarched it up,
yeah,
deep fried it,
nice,
a little dipping sauce, they were tasty.
Sounds good.
Yeah,
that was like dessert from the party.
Yeah.
Well, I think we're about out of time. Moxie, do you have any other questions for Matt since we have him here in the studio?
Well, I was thinking that maybe it's kind of funny for like bobbing for eels because it's kind of dangerous.
Yeah,
it is.
It is.
It is kind dangerous. Of
fun. Would you like to have that at your birthday party?
No.
What about bobbing for apples?
Yes, I want bobbing for apples with no real animals.
Okay. Can we put like fake animals
fake
in the water?
Eels.
Yeah,
right. Fake snakes,
like rubber snakes.
All right, that sounds awesome. We'll have bobbing for apples and snakes at your birthday in
I'll
July.
Be there.
All right, awesome. Well, Matt, thanks for coming on. Is there anything else that you anything you have coming up that you want to mention? So you just did your winter dinner, so people should look for that next year.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Anything else you want
to? I also do. I forgot to mention I do recipes. There's this Japanese kind of healthy lifestyle website called KD Kitchen, and the owner Mari, we met years ago, and I just started doing the recipes for them. I do three a month, and it's cool because the company's based in New York, but all the clients are in Japan. And
all the videos are online, so you can actually see Matt's recipes.
Yes, that's
Japanese overlay.
Yeah.
So it's actually kind of cool.
It's very cool.
When I grow up, I want to be a French chef like Julia Child. And I'm going to have a TV show called The French Chef Volume 2. It's not going to be Julia Child, but it's going to be me.
I love that idea. That's
awesome. So people can find that at kdkitchen.com?
Yeah, kdkitchen.com.
Cool.
Or if you go on YouTube, KD Kitchen, and all the videos will pop up.
Awesome. Yeah, definitely recommend people check that out.
Thanks.
Well, thanks, Matt. It's been a real pleasure.
Thanks,
everybody, for listening to Feast Your Ears today. Thank you, Moxie, for being my co-host. A big thank you to Kristen Baylor, who's my producer here, and David Tadashore, who engineers this show every week. You can find Feast Your Ears, as well as lots of other great shows, at heritageradionetwork.org and on iTunes and Stitcher. And coming up, I will be live on Saturday, the 21st, and we will be at the Good Food Mercantile, which is the follow-up to the Good Food Awards, which is taking place in San Francisco. So if you're listening to this live on Wednesday when it airs, please tune in again on Saturday from 12 to 5 Pacific time, and I'll be doing some great interviews there. Michael Harlan Turkell will be doing some interviews. David, our engineer, and Katie, our executive director here at Heritage, will be doing some interviews, so that's going to be a really, really good time. You should definitely tune in for that. You can follow Matt on Instagram at Matt Marchese. And you can follow me on social media at The Food Baller. And thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Heritage_Radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.